A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's noticed a weird category of online retailer. The names Farnell, Mouser, Digiki. These sites have vast, almost infinite-looking catalogs. They seem to distribute internationally, but they don't quite look or feel like normal consumer stores. He's never ordered from them. Partly because in Israel, there are some sketchy marketplace sites that hold zero inventory and just mark up imports. But he suspects these are different. So the question is, what is this class of retailer actually called? And can you actually order from them as a regular person?
Oh, this is a wonderful question. And the short answer is, yes, you absolutely can. But that yes comes with an asterisk, the size of a shipping container. These companies are called electronic component distributors. That's the official industry term. And they are not retailers in the normal sense at all. They're the backbone of how anything with a circuit board gets built.
Electronic component distributors. So not a store, not a wholesaler, not a marketplace. A distributor.
And that word distributor is doing a lot of heavy lifting. A retailer buys products, marks them up, and sells to consumers. A distributor is an authorized intermediary between manufacturers and the companies that build things. Digiki, Mouser, Farnell. These companies have direct relationships with thousands of manufacturers. Texas Instruments, Analog Devices, TE Connectivity, Molex. They stock millions of individual part numbers, and they guarantee that the parts are authentic, traceable, and haven't been sitting in a humid warehouse in Shenzhen for 3 years.
The value proposition is not price. It's trust.
Trust and logistics. If you're an engineer at a medical device company designing a ventilator and you need a specific voltage regulator that costs 47 cents, you cannot afford to get a counterfeit. A fake capacitor fails, someone dies. That sounds dramatic, but it's not. The U Department of Defense has been fighting counterfeit components in military supply chains for over a decade. There was a famous Senate Armed Services Committee hearing in 2011 where they showed a fake chip that had been stripped, repainted, and relabeled as a military-grade part. Distributors like Digiki and Mouser basically emerged as the solution to that problem.
The chip laundromat.
That's exactly what it is. You take discarded or rejected components, clean them up, print new part numbers on them, and sell them as new. It's a multi-billion dollar problem. Authorized distributors are the only guaranteed break in that chain, because they buy directly from the manufacturer. The parts come in sealed packages with full traceability back to the fabrication plant.
These companies sit between the chip fab in Taiwan or Texas, and the factory floor in Stuttgart. And somewhere along the way, they built websites.
And this is where it gets interesting. Digiki launched its website in 1995. Mouser was acquired by Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway in 2007. Farnell was bought by Avnet in 2016. These are not small operations. Digiki did over $5 billion in revenue last year. They have a 2.7 million square foot warehouse in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. That's a town of about 9,000 people, by the way. The largest building for hundreds of miles is a warehouse full of capacitors and microcontrollers.
Thief River Falls, Minnesota. That's practically a Canadian border town. I have to imagine the local economy is mostly Digiki employees and the diner they eat at.
It's exactly that. Digiki employs over 5,000 people there. The founder, Ronald Stordahl, started the company in 1972 out of his apartment, selling a single product, a digital keyer for ham radio enthusiasts, hence the name.
The name is literally digital keyer?
A device that converts Morse code key presses into properly timed electronic pulses. That was the first product. And now they ship to over 180 countries, stock over 15 million part numbers, and process something like 27,000 orders a day.
From ham radio keyer to global logistics empire. That's the most American thing I've heard all week.
It really is. And Mouser has a similar origin story, founded in 1964 by a physics teacher in California named Jerry Mouser. He was buying components for his students' projects and realized there was a gap in the market for selling small quantities to hobbyists and educators. That's actually a key distinction. Mauser started explicitly to serve the small order market. No minimum order. They'll sell you a single resistor for 3 cents.
This is where we get to the second part of the prompt. Can a regular person actually order from these places? Because looking at the websites, they don't exactly scream, "Welcome, consumer."
They really don't. The user interface is, let's say, information dense. You search for a capacitor, and you get a table with 40 columns, capacitance, voltage rating, tolerance, temperature coefficient, package size, dielectric material, equivalent series resistance, ripple current rating. If you don't know what any of those mean, you are going to have a bad time.
It's like walking into a commercial kitchen supply store when you just want a frying pan. Everything is industrial, nothing is explained, and the staff assumes you know what a blast chiller is.
That's the perfect analogy. These sites are designed for professional engineers who know exactly what part number they need. The search bar is not for browsing, it's for typing LM37T and hitting enter. And yet, and this is the beautiful thing, they will absolutely sell to you. No business license required, no minimum order. You create an account with your name and address, you add a 5-cent microcontroller to your cart, and they will ship it to your house. DigiKey even offers free shipping on orders over $50 in the U, and they have a flat rate option for smaller orders.
The barrier is not policy, it's knowledge.
Knowledge and patience. The parametric search on these sites is incredibly powerful if you know how to use it. You can filter by literally dozens of technical specifications. But the learning curve is steep. It's not Amazon. There are no product recommendations based on your browsing history. No customers who bought this also bought. No reviews with star ratings, just data sheets in PDF format.
The anti-algorithm. I respect that.
It's refreshing, honestly. But it also means a lot of consumers bounce off these sites immediately. They land on a product page, see a wall of technical specifications, and assume it's not for them. Which is a shame, because the pricing is often significantly better than buying the same components through Amazon or eBay, and you get the guarantee of authenticity.
Let's talk pricing. The prompt mentions sketchy Israeli marketplace sites that hold no inventory and just mark up imports. How does the markup compare between a real distributor and one of those middleman operations?
It varies wildly, but the pattern is consistent. A common microcontroller like the ATmega328P, the brain of most Arduino boards, costs about $2.30 on DigiKey in single quantities. The same chip on Amazon might be $10 for a pack of three, sold by some third-party reseller who bought it on DigiKey and is arbitraging the convenience. The Israeli sketchy sites Daniel's describing are doing the same thing, but often with even higher markups because they're serving a smaller market with fewer alternatives.
The entire business model of these middlemen is, you don't know you can buy from DigiKey directly, and we're not going to tell you.
That's the information asymmetry that sustains a lot of niche e-commerce. And it's particularly acute in electronics because the supply chain is so opaque. Most people don't know what a component distributor is. They've never heard of Mauser or Fornell. If they need a specific chip for a repair or a hobby project, they Google it, find it on Amazon or eBay or some random site, and pay whatever the price is. They don't realize there's a whole parallel retail universe where the exact same part costs a fifth as much and comes with a certificate of authenticity.
Fornell is the one I've seen most in the European and Israeli context. What's their deal?
Fornell is interesting because they have a dual identity. In Europe and much of the world, they operate as Fornell. In the U, they go by Newark. It's the same company, same inventory, different branding. They're part of Avnet now, which is one of the two giant distributors. Arrow and Avnet are the mega distributors that mostly do huge business-to-business volumes, but Fornell and Newark are the smaller order arms. They also own a community site called Element 14, which is a play on the silicon phosphorus thing for electronics hobbyists and engineers. It's an engineering community with forums, tutorials, design resources. So Fornell has actually made a concerted effort to court the hobbyist and education market.
That's the silicon atomic number plus phosphorus, right?
14 and 15. Silicon and phosphorus are the foundation of semiconductor doping. It's a deep-cut nerd joke built into the brand name.
Of course it is. So Farnell has a community play. Digikey has the massive warehouse in Minnesota. What's Mouser's angle?
Mouser markets itself heavily on new product introductions. They claim to launch more new products each week than anyone else in the industry. Their catalog is designed around discovery. Engineers can see the latest sensors, the newest microcontrollers, components that just hit the market. They position themselves as the place you go when you're designing something new and need to know what's available. Digikey is more about breadth and availability. Farnell is about community and education. But they all overlap heavily in practice.
All three will sell you a single resistor.
Though I should mention, shipping costs on a 3-set resistor can be a rude awakening. Digikey's cheapest used shipping option is around $5. Mouser's is similar. Farnell often has a handling fee for small orders. So, if you literally just need one resistor, you're better off finding a local electronics shop or buying from a hobbyist-oriented retailer like Adafruit or SparkFun, which we should probably talk about.
Right, because those are the consumer-facing layer on top of the distribution ecosystem.
Adafruit and SparkFun are not component distributors. They're what you'd call value-added resellers or curated educational retailers. They buy components from places like Digikey, design breakout boards and kits around them, write tutorials, and sell to hobbyists at a markup. They're doing the curation work that the distributors don't do. You go to Adafruit and search temperature sensor, and you get a product page with photos, wiring diagrams, code examples, and a friendly description. You go to Digikey and search temperature sensor, and you get 10,000 results in a table.
The curation is the product. That's the whole thing.
It's worth paying for. If you're a beginner or you just want to get something working quickly, the Adafruit markup is entirely reasonable. You're paying for the documentation, the community support, the handholding. But once you know what you're doing, once you can read a data sheet and you know what part number you need, buying directly from the distributor saves you a lot of money.
There's a progression. You start with SparkFun and Adafruit, you learn the ropes, and eventually you graduate to the parametric search horror show that is the Digikey catalog.
It's not a horror show. It's beautiful. It's a cathedral of data.
A cathedral of data. And Herman Poppleberry is its most devoted parishioner.
I will not deny this. There is something genuinely satisfying about narrowing down a search from 50,000 capacitors to the exact three that meet your requirements, comparing their ripple current ratings, and selecting the optimal one. It's a form of engineering pleasure that's hard to explain to someone who hasn't experienced it.
I experience a similar pleasure when I find the exact right leaf for a poultice. But we don't need to get into leaf medicine.
We absolutely do not. But I will say, the parametric search thing is not just about finding a part, it's about understanding the design space. When you see that increasing the capacitance means increasing the package size, or that higher temperature ratings come with a price premium, you're learning about the physical constraints of manufacturing. It's educational in a way that a curated storefront can't be.
These distributors are accidentally educational, simply by exposing the full complexity of the parts landscape.
Accidentally and sometimes intentionally. Farnell's Element 14 community is explicitly educational. Digikey has a huge library of reference designs and application notes. Mouser has a technical resource center with articles and design guides. They all recognize that educating engineers creates loyal customers. If you learn how to design circuits using Digikey's tools and search interface, you're probably going to keep buying from Digikey.
Let's go back to the prompt's original skepticism for a second. The concern was whether these sites would actually sell small consumer quantities, and you've established that they will. But why is it so hard to believe that they would?
Because the websites look institutional. The branding is corporate. There's no add to wishlist button, no people who viewed this also viewed, no customer photos. The entire design language says this is for procurement departments, not people. And historically, that was true. For decades, these companies primarily sold to businesses. The hobbyist market was an afterthought. But two things changed. First, the maker movement exploded. Arduino, Raspberry Pi, 3D printing, and suddenly millions of people were designing electronics at home. Second, e-commerce made it cost-effective to process small orders. The marginal cost of picking and packing a single resistor versus a reel of 10,000 is mostly in the labor, and warehouse automation has driven that down.
The maker movement basically dragged these industrial distributors into the consumer space, whether they liked it or not.
Most of them embraced it. Mauser was already there from the beginning. Remember, Jerry Mauser was a teacher. Digiki has leaned into it heavily with their educational initiatives. Farnell acquired Element 14 specifically to build a community around hobbyists and students. These companies realize that today's hobbyist ordering $10 of parts is tomorrow's professional engineer ordering $10,000 of parts for a production run.
It's a customer acquisition funnel that spans a decade.
And it works. I've talked to engineers who have been buying from Digiki since they were teenagers building guitar pedals in their garage. Now they're specifying components for automotive electronics, and they still default to Digiki because they know the search interface, they trust the supply chain, and the company treated them well when their orders were tiny.
The long game. I appreciate a business that thinks in decades.
It's rare. And it's partly enabled by the fact that these are not normal consumer businesses. They're not chasing quarterly growth targets the way a startup would. Mauser is owned by Berkshire Hathaway, which famously doesn't care about quarterly earnings. Digiki is still privately held by the Stordahl family. Farnell is part of Avnet, a public company, but the component distribution business is fundamentally stable and boring. It's not glamorous. It's not trying to disrupt anything. It's just moving parts from factories to engineers.
Boring businesses are the best businesses. Everyone wants to build the next social network. Nobody wants to run the warehouse that stocks every capacitor known to man.
Yet the warehouse is a money printing machine. The margins aren't spectacular on a per part basis, but the volume is enormous and the moat is incredibly wide. Building a competitor to Digiki would require a multi-billion dollar investment in warehouse infrastructure, supplier relationships that take decades to establish, and a catalog of millions of SKUs. Nobody is going to do that. The incumbents are essentially unassailable.
The electronic component distribution industry is a natural oligopoly. High barriers to entry, massive economies of scale, deep moats.
It's an oligopoly that happens to serve customers extremely well. Prices are competitive, shipping is fast, authenticity is guaranteed, and the selection is mind-boggling. It's one of those rare cases where the market structure actually benefits everyone.
Let's talk about the international angle. The prompt mentioned that these companies seem to distribute internationally. How does that actually work in practice?
It varies by region. Digiki ships to over 180 countries. They handle customs documentation, duties, and taxes at checkout in many cases. So if you're in Israel, you can place an order on Digiki's website, pay in your local currency, and they'll handle the import paperwork. The package arrives via FedEx or DHL, typically within a few days. Mauser does the same. Farnell has local warehouses and websites for many regions. There's a Farnell Israel site specifically.
There's a Farnell Israel?
Yes, Farnell has a localized site for Israel with pricing in shekels. They also have local sites for most European countries, Australia, and several Asian markets. Digiki and Mauser are more centralized. They ship globally from their U warehouses, though Digiki has been expanding its international fulfillment capabilities.
The Israeli consumer who's been skeptical about these sites could go to Farnell's Israeli site, order in shekels, and get components delivered without dealing with sketchy middlemen.
And the pricing would almost certainly be better than whatever the no-inventory marketplace sites are charging. The only caveat is that Farnell's small order handling charges can be annoying. You might pay a 6-euro surcharge on an order under a certain threshold. But even with that, you're still probably saving money compared to the middlemen.
You're getting authentic parts, not whatever fell off a truck in Guangdong.
Which matters more than most people realize. Counterfeit components are not just a military problem. They show up in consumer electronics all the time. A fake capacitor in a power supply can fail and take out your entire project, or worse, start a fire. There was a well-known case about 10 years ago where counterfeit electrolytic capacitors caused widespread failures in computer motherboards. The so-called capacitor plague. Some of those failures were traced to an incomplete electrolyte formula that had been stolen through industrial espionage and then botched in production. The counterfeiters got the formula wrong, and the capacitors would bulge and burst after a few months of use.
Industrial espionage leading to exploding capacitors. That's a fantastic story.
It gets better. The stolen formula was missing a key stabilizing compound because the thief didn't copy the entire document. so thousands of computers died because someone was sloppy with their corporate espionage.
That's the most on-brand failure mode for a crime. Not getting caught, just doing the crime badly.
The downstream consequences were enormous. Dell, HP, Apple, all of them had to deal with failing motherboards. The total cost was estimated in the hundreds of millions of dollars. All because of bad capacitors that looked identical to the real thing.
When you buy from DigiKey or Mouser, you're not just paying for convenience, you're paying for the capacitor that won't explode.
That's the value proposition in a nutshell. Authenticity, traceability, and reliability. For a hobbyist project, a counterfeit part might just mean frustration and a non-functional circuit. For a professional product, it could mean warranty claims, regulatory issues, or worse. The distributors guarantee that the part you ordered is the part you receive, from the manufacturer you specified, with a documented chain of custody.
Let me ask a practical question. Say I'm a complete beginner. I've never ordered from one of these sites. I don't know what a parametric search is. I just need some basic components for an Arduino project. What's my actual step-by-step?
Step 1. Figure out what you actually need. If you're following a tutorial, it should list specific part numbers or at least specifications. If you don't have that information, start with Adafruit or SparkFun. Their product pages will tell you exactly what the component is and often link to the manufacturer's part number on DigiKey. Step 2. Go to DigiKey or Mouser, search for that part number, and add it to your cart. Step 3. Build up your order to hit the free shipping threshold if possible. Add some common components you'll use later, like resistors, capacitors, LEDs, headers. Step 4. Check out with a credit card and wait for your package.
The trick is to not browse. Don't try to discover components through their interface. Know what you need before you arrive.
That's the beginner strategy, yes. The advanced strategy is to learn how to use the parametric search effectively, which is a skill in itself. And honestly, for a lot of hobbyists, it's a skill worth developing. Once you understand how to filter by package type, temperature range, tolerance, and so on, you can find parts that are cheaper, better, or more available than whatever someone recommended in a tutorial.
Let's talk about that, because it's a trap for beginners.
You find the perfect chip, great price, exactly the specs you need, and then you realize it's a BGA package. Ball grid array, which means the connections are tiny solder balls on the underside of the chip and you cannot solder it with a normal iron. You need a reflow oven or a hot air station. Or it's a QFN package with pads that are basically invisible. Or it's a wafer level chip scale package the size of a grain of sand.
The data sheet says this is exactly what you need. The physical reality says you will never successfully solder this.
The distributors do not warn you about this. They assume you know what you're doing. That's the fundamental tension of these sites. They're not gatekeeping intentionally, they're just designed for a different user. An engineer specifying components for a production board knows that a 0402 resistor is the size of a grain of pepper and requires a microscope and tweezers to handle. A hobbyist might not.
The 0402 resistor. Two zeros and a two. That's the imperial code for a component that's 0.04 inches by 0.02 inches.
1 millimeter by half a millimeter. They're so small that you can inhale them by accident. I'm not joking. There are forum posts about this.
Inhaling a resistor. That's a new category of occupational hazard.
The hobbyist electronics world is full of these delightful absurdities. But the point is, the distributors don't hold your hand. They're selling to professionals, and they assume professional knowledge. That's not a flaw in their business model. It's just a fact that beginners need to be aware of.
We've established what these companies are, that you can order from them, and that the main barrier is knowledge. But I want to zoom out for a second. Why does this category of retailer even exist? Why isn't there just one giant electronic supermarket that serves both consumers and professionals?
Because the needs are fundamentally different. A consumer electronics retailer, think Best Buy, sells finished products. A microwave, a laptop, a television. A component distributor sells the building blocks. The customer for a microwave wants a product that works out of the box. The customer for a magnetron, the microwave generating component inside, wants to integrate it into a larger system. Those are completely different supply chains, different inventory requirements, different support needs.
There are consumer electronics retailers that also sell components, right? Micro Center comes to mind.
Micro Center is actually a fascinating hybrid. They have a components aisle with Arduino boards, Raspberry Pis, resistors, soldering equipment. It's a physical retail experience for hobbyist electronics. But their component selection is tiny compared to DigiKey, a few hundred SKUs versus millions. And their pricing is higher because they have the overhead of physical retail locations. MicroCenter is great for impulse purchases and immediate needs. It's not a substitute for a distributor if you're doing serious work.
Radio Shack, before its long, slow death.
Radio Shack is the cautionary tale here. They tried to be everything. Components, consumer electronics, cell phones, batteries, toys, and they ended up being nothing in particular. By the time they collapsed, the components section was a sad shelf of overpriced resistors and dusty project boxes. The hobbyists had already moved online. The consumer electronics customers had moved to Best Buy and Amazon. There was no one left.
The everything store that sold to no one.
The distributors learned from that. They didn't try to become consumer friendly. They stayed in their lane. They optimized for the professional engineer, and they let the hobbyists come to them if they were willing to learn the interface. It's a very focused business strategy, and it worked.
There's a lesson in that. Don't chase everyone. Be indispensable to someone.
If you're indispensable to the people who design everything, you're indirectly indispensable to everyone. The microcontroller in your microwave, the voltage regulator in your car, the sensor in your thermostat, somewhere in the design process for every one of those, an engineer ordered samples from DigiKey or Mouser.
The invisible backbone. You interact with these companies' products every second of your life, and you've never heard of them.
That's the beauty of it. They're the most important companies you've never heard of, unless you're an engineer, in which case they're the most important companies you order from twice a week.
Let's circle back to the international dimension one more time. The prompt specifically mentioned Israel, but this applies anywhere with a small market and limited local retail. What's the landscape for someone in, say, Brazil, or South Africa, or Thailand?
It's similar everywhere. The global distributors ship internationally. The main friction points are shipping costs, import duties, and sometimes minimum order values for free shipping that are harder to hit if you're overseas. But the fundamental value proposition is the same. In countries with less developed electronics retail sectors, the gap between distributor pricing and local middleman pricing is often even larger. The sketchy marketplace sites Daniel described exist everywhere. They're filling a gap that doesn't actually need to be filled, because the distributors will sell to you directly.
The middleman's entire existence depends on you not knowing the direct path exists.
That's true of so many industries. Travel agents before Expedia. Stockbrokers before Robinhood. Real estate agents who do nothing but unlock a door. Information asymmetry is a business model. And the internet keeps eating away at it one industry at a time.
Though in this case, the internet didn't eat the middleman. The middleman was the internet. These distributors have been online for decades. The information was always available. It was just hidden behind a user interface that looks like it was designed by an engineer who hates you.
That's a bit harsh. It was designed by an engineer who loves other engineers. The hatred of non-engineers is just a side effect.
Collateral damage in the war on ignorance.
And to be fair, the interfaces have improved significantly over the years. DigiKey's site today is much more usable than it was 10 years ago. They've added better search, more filtering options, product photos, even some basic educational content. Mouser has invested heavily in their online experience. They're not trying to be Amazon, but they're also not trying to be actively hostile to newcomers.
Slowly, grudgingly, becoming slightly more welcoming. That's the DigiKey story.
They're sloths about it.
I resent that. Sloths are deliberate. There's a difference. We're not having this argument again.
But the point stands. These companies are evolving toward a more inclusive customer experience, just very slowly. And in the meantime, the maker movement has built a whole ecosystem of educational retailers, YouTube channels, and community forums that bridge the gap. You don't need the distributor to teach you, you just need them to ship you the parts.
To answer the prompt directly, this class of retailer is called an electronic component distributor. Yes, you can order from them as a consumer. No minimum order, no business license required. The main challenges are the steep learning curve of the interface and the shipping economics for very small orders. And the best strategy is to know what you need before you arrive. or to start with a curated retailer like Adafruit or SparkFun, and graduate to the distributors when you're ready.
That's the summary. I'd add one more thing. If you're in Israel, start with Farnell's Israeli site. The localized experience will be smoother. And if you're anywhere else, Digi-Key and Mouser are both excellent choices. You really can't go wrong with any of them.
You'll pay less than you would on the sketchy marketplace sites, while getting authentic parts that won't explode.
The not exploding part is underrated.
It's the kind of feature you don't appreciate until it's absent, like a roof.
Or a working capacitor. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, a British naval expedition to New Zealand's South Island nearly codified sepak takraw, the Southeast Asian kick volleyball sport, as an official crew pastime after sailors witnessed Maori warriors playing a strikingly similar game with a woven rattan ball. But the ship's naturalist dismissed it in his journal as unremarkable foot tennis, and the sport vanished from British naval record for another 2 centuries.
Unremarkable foot tennis. The greatest sport that never was.
The naturalist really buried the lead on that one.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for that glimpse of what could have been. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back soon with another prompt, another rabbit hole, and another fun fact from Hilbert.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.